And I really was drawn in my research as an adult that was looking into real estate to the essential need of housing. So, you know, as a technologist, I know more and more things are going online. When I was in technology, many, many jobs were outsourced. So lots of people that were around me suddenly weren't working around me because their jobs were replaced by people in other countries that were making 25% of what that original person made. So I'm always looking at how to not be replaceable. What can't be replaced? Well, shopping malls can be replaced. We all know there's online shopping, right? It's a trend. It's going. But what can't be replaced is housing. You have to live somewhere. Right. Until we're like living in a spaceship or something, you physically have to have some place to live.
Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings, the number one show about growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. Now, here's your host, Mark Allen Kenny.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings. I'm Mark Allen Kenny. Our guest today is Anna Myers. How are you doing today, Anna?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me here.
Awesome. Thanks for being here. Anna serves as vice president at Grow Capitus, a commercial real estate investment company based in the San Francisco Bay Area. Grow Capitus has a current portfolio of over 3,000 units for a total value of over $345 million. As the lead underwriter for the company, Anna teaches deal analysis for Multifamily U in quarterly boot camps. She's also a regular speaker on podcasts, webinars, at conferences, and covers topics including asset management, deal analysis, multifamily syndication, and much, much more. So Anna, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I really appreciate you taking the time. Could you tell the listeners just a little bit more about your background and how you got started in real estate?
Sure. So I actually got started in real estate as a wee gal because my family is in commercial real estate. So my grandfather was a commercial real estate entrepreneur. He started flipping houses in the late 30s and 40s. So, you know, probably the 40s, he came to LA and started flipping houses and then developed. Because he was an entrepreneur and a big thinker, he turned that land until he was developing shopping malls. So I'm the youngest grandchild. And so I grew up in this family that was, you know, my father's an architect, my uncles are all developers. So that's what we did. You know, there's big billboards as I was driving down the freeway that said, "Ask Bob Simons." And that was my grandpa. And all my cousins worked at the real estate office. So that's kind of all I knew. But I didn't go into real estate when I started out. I actually became a technologist because computers were really big at that time. And so I went into technology and had a 18 to 20 year career in technology. Then the tech crash happened of 2000 and I switched. And I actually became a full-time professional photographer. I opened my own business in the Bay Area and specialized in people. I'm one of those right brain, left brain people. So it's like I'm a scientist, but an artist, and I kind of vacillate back and forth. I'm especially engaged in visual arts. So anyway, as a photographer, that's how I got back to real estate because I was a very successful photographer, had a great business, and the government was just taxing the heck out of me. So it seemed like as much as I made is as much as they took, which wasn't going to work very well for me. It was not going to end well. So I started investing in real estate on my own to, you know, building back up my own portfolio so that I could save on taxes to take advantage of depreciation. Because as, you know, growing up in the family I grew up in, I knew that this was a thing you could do. So I started buying single family homes and these types of things with my husband and I, and that solved my tax problem, which was awesome. But it did not solve the problem of me working to the bone and not being able to scale. So going back to the technologist that's always trying to scale, I realized that even as much as I love photography and as well as my business was being run, I couldn't proceed and have a retirement in because I basically owned a job. So I pivoted. I decided that I was going to create a five-year plan and exit that job that I owned and go into real estate full-time.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I started, you know, working less at my studio because everything was really dialed in. I'm a very systems and process oriented person. So I was able to scale back at the studio and increase my learning. Every day I wasn't in the studio, I was dedicated to learning, attending conferences, podcasts, going to see cities, all that type of stuff. So that's how it happened. And during that journey, I thought I was going to do the Burr methodology. I'm sure, you know, everybody's heard about the, you know, buy, rehab, rent, and refi and repeat. And so that was, I was like, I'm going to do it. And then along the way, I found out about multifamily. And as a tech person and a numbers gal, that's the science side of me, boy, did multifamily sing to me, because you can control the cost. You can control the value of your building by the work you put into it. Remember that scalability, what I was never able to do in photography? You can do it in multifamily. So I pivoted completely into multifamily. That's when I had met Neil Bawa. I actually took his boot camp, and that's how I just, the light bulb went off, and started volunteering for Neil. And within 8 months, I was vice president of the company.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive. So what was that 5-year plan? Did you set out thinking you'd do the BRRRR strategy and then you pivoted during that 5 years?
Yes, I set out, first of all, educating, right?
Okay.
And then striving to replace my photography studio income, because I was, you know, I was doing really well. So I was striving to replace that income so that I could, turn the studio off in effect. So it basically happened in 4 years instead of five. So I was able to achieve that. So in mid-2018 is when I closed my studio. And, a lot of people said, like, oh my gosh, how could you ever stop being a photographer? And, you know, the answer is, I still am a photographer. You can't take that out of me. I can take pictures as much as I want. I just don't have to earn my daily bread by taking pictures. So, you know, so there's lots of skills that we have in our lives. But I think as we get older in life, we have to figure out how to leverage the skills so that we can support our family, create the life we want for our children. And some of those skills that we really love, maybe we put to the side and do them all as a hobby. And we need to look for things that scale. That was my big, what I've always pivoted towards. And that's where I need to go. And I'm really glad that I went there, especially since the pandemic hit. I did not want to be a photographer during the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Can we talk a little bit about your mindset during that transitional period and working with Neil? And, you know, the background with your family is a pretty incredible story. Do you feel like your exposure to real estate at an early age kind of, set that in your mind, realizing that it was possible for you? Or was it more of just like tactically, how do I do this? Or were you like a lot of other people trying to wrestle with the idea that you can do this and having the mindset to move forward? Was that an issue for you or not really?
I would say it was not an issue for me because my family, I had full support from my family. I mean, I'm not just saying like, oh, my mom thought it was a cool idea. Like all of my cousins, everybody that saw me going into it was like, oh my gosh, grandpa would be so proud of you. So that was one thing. I had no obstacles in my way. And I also had an example that said, you can be whatever you want to be through real estate. My grandfather was a self-made millionaire at a time that millionaire was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not only did he make a huge amount of money for himself out of literally nothing, he was a self-made man, but he created charities that to this day, part of the portfolio is held in a trust, and all of the money that's generated from that trust goes to charity. And that's never going to end. So not only can you create a wealth for your family, it put all of us kids through college. All of the grandchildren were put through college through real estate funds. So I had so much evidence of how much good can happen in the world through real estate. And I never saw anything terrible happening to my family. They all lived pretty well. I know there was ups and downs in real estate. So I didn't go into it with the mindset that it's all good. I certainly had, being in a family that was involved in real estate for decades, you definitely get a sense of the goods, the bads, the earthquakes that come through LA and really shatter. There are big things that happen that you have no control over. So you always have to be really careful in real estate and really smart about what you're doing. But I would say the entrepreneurial spirit runs very, very deep in my family. My family would much rather have me be an entrepreneur working for myself than working for someone else. That was very clear from the time I was in my 20s. In fact, my S Corp that I started was in my 20s. You know, even when I was working in IT, I worked for myself. I had my own IT consulting company with my husband. So that's just kind of always how I've rolled, is to figure that stuff out. And it's always also been about saving on taxes as much as possible, because there's one thing my grandfather used to say, it's not what you make, it's what you keep. And real estate can really help you with that. In fact, it's one of the best vehicles through depreciation to be able to control taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. So let's talk about your strategy a little bit. I think, you know, it's very interesting to just see kind of your family's progression since the 1930s and just being part of that story of like land development and shopping centers and things like that. What made you gravitate specifically towards multifamily? Why did you prefer sort of that strategy when it comes to real estate?
Well, I think going back to the ups and downs of real estate, the writing has been on the wall for shopping malls for a while, that sure. things were pivoting. And I really was drawn in my research as an adult that was looking into real estate to the essential need of housing. So, you know, as a technologist, I know more and more things are going online. When I was in technology, many, many jobs were outsourced. So lots of people that were around me suddenly weren't working around me because their jobs were replaced by people in other countries that were making 25% of what that original person made. So I'm always looking at how to not be replaceable. What can't be replaced? Well, shopping malls can be replaced. We all know there's online shopping, right? It's a trend. It's going. But what can't be replaced is housing. You have to live somewhere.
Right.
Until we're like living in a spaceship or something, you physically have to have some place to live. So that to me seemed to be pretty rock solid that it was not going away. So that was my strategy for sure about what I should be investing in. And then, you know, became the how and how to scale. Because when you try to do the whole BRRRR technology is really how to scale your money, right? And be able to recycle it and reuse it. But it's not an easy strategy. And there comes an end, you know, when you have those, your spouse has 10 loans, you have 10 loans. And then you're like, okay, where do we go from here? Well, where do you go? You go to apartment buildings.
Sure.
Because you can't do, you know, it's like, you can't really do anything else in this space. And by that time, you've pretty much done with single family and you are ready to be in the much more scalable world of multifamily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I wanted to ask you about something you said earlier about controlling the value of an asset. And that really jumped out to me. And I think, you mm-hmm. know, that's one of the great things about being an operator and getting into this business. Could you speak to that a little bit? Maybe kind of give a quick overview of, you know, asset management. And we do have a lot of passive investors who listen to this show. How can they tell if the operator that they're thinking about working with is a good asset manager?
Sure. Well, first of all, in the initial projected, you know, the webinar or the business plan that's projected about the project that the person's doing or the person's investing in, the underwriting for that initial project, that should be the basis for what the business plan is for the project, for the property, right? So you take that underwriting and then that tells you how many units you're supposed to turn per month and how much you're supposed to make on those turns. So now you're starting to work on it. And what I mean is, as people move out of a value add building, that's an existing multifamily that's already built and operational, as tenants normally move out, when they move out, you are going to select the units, you're going to target the units that you want to renovate. Not every unit you want to put a full premium renovation on. And the reason, let me give you an example. Say that you have 6 units available for rent, okay? You have a 150 unit building, you have 6 units coming up for rent. Well, you may want to have a range of options to offer to the market. You might want some classic rents for people that aren't able to afford your premium, as well as your premium rents. Your classic rent is a non-renovated unit. So it might, if the building is 1970s, it might have gone through a few renovations over time, but it's not really anything special. It's, you know, Formica and, you know, kind of older floors, and you know, it's painted, it's clean, but it's a classic unit. A premium renovation is when you're taking your capital expenditure budget and you're infusing an amount of money anywhere from, you know, $4,000 to $9,000 for a cosmetic upgrade. And that's going to range, how much you spend is really going to depend on the market you're in and who your target tenant is. $4,000 is really on the low end. So if that would be if you already, maybe you have a building that's in 2000 or something like that, but a 2000-year-old building built in 2000, 2010. Most people are spending anywhere from $5,500 to $9,500 on renovations these days because construction's gone up. So you have a lot that there's obviously the cost of labor, but the cost of materials has really gone up. So that's something that an asset manager needs to be careful of. In your underwriting, you projected, you know, maybe $5,500, but it's turning out to cost you $6,250. So if you are data-driven like our company is, and as an asset manager, and I'm writing my property managers to provide the data into specialized trackers that we use, and every week they're updating, so I can see for every unit that's being turned, what is the exact budget spent on each item compared to the projected budget, and how long it's taking them to turn it, how long between leases between the person moved out and the person moved in. That's another key metric. If it's taking them 2 months to renovate, you're losing money. So you need to be super tight. And as an asset manager, you have to be really writing your property manager to keep those timelines super tight. So lots of things that asset managers do, but I will tell you, it's all about data for us. Everything, you can't manage what you cannot measure. So by having the property manager put in the data, we, you know, generate charts and trends out of this, it becomes very, very apparent where the issues are. Is the issue that things are taking too long? Is the issue that things are too expensive? Is the issue that our budget was wrong, that we just missed the mark in our underwriting? Any way you slice it or dice it, with that information, you're able to pivot and make the correct adjustments to whichever it is, so that you can either get back on your business plan, or you can pivot your business plan to still reach the projected returns that you had told to investors. So yes, I think there's quite a bit that asset managers are responsible about. I'm very passionate about asset managing, as you can see. I spend a lot of my hours doing it. And total systems geek, total data nerd. My property managers really have to deliver. But I think it's great working as a team, though, to create a wonderful place for people to live and to create a community that is valued.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then for the system that you're using, I'm just super curious, is that, you know, is this something that you built in-house, or is it sort of like, can Excel work for most people, or what do you recommend?
Yes, we did build it in-house. So it's basically, you know, we call them trackers. They're also known as Google Sheets.
Sure.
Awesome. So we like Google Sheets, by the way, because it's shareable between the property manager and the team that's asset managing, myself and my partners. So we're all able to see the one Google Sheet that has the one data. If you are sharing Excel files, like you have to email me an Excel file, and then I have to download it and I have to open it up. And if I make a change, then I've got to email it back to you, and you've got to download it and open it. And then it's like, well, who's got the right version? So sure, we solve all of that with really easy, free technology, which is called Google Sheets. We'd like to do a lot with things that are very simple. The simpler we can make it, the better. You know, I was a programmer for many, many years in my life, and I always thought, and I started out programming in a financial accounting office, programming Excel spreadsheets. And then I was, you know, doing all these object-oriented models, and I was creating enterprise portals. And here, if anyone had told me that I'd be back to programming Excel, I would have laughed to be like, are you kidding me, Excel? But, you know, it's a pretty powerful horse.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. So another question related to kind of underwriting deals is market analysis. And you're teaching this as well in some of your classes. How do you choose your markets? What markets do you like these days?
Well, again, we're very data oriented. For any of you that have not yet been exposed to my business partner, Neil Bawa, he's pretty phenomenal. And he has created a system that he calls Location Magic. And it teaches you how to analyze a market. And even more importantly, once you have the market, the sub-markets, the micro neighborhoods within the market, to know where to invest so that you're investing in a city that is up and coming. And then within that city, you're investing in the path of progress. And this incredible game-changing system is available for the fancy price of free. Yes, it is free because, and many people say like, Neil, you're crazy. Like this changed the way that I think about investing. It completely changed my game. Like you could make so much money off of this. And he's like, no, my mindset is one of abundance. And I just want to give this to the universe so that people have the power. They are empowered to make good decisions. So I implore you to, whether you're a passive investor or an active investor, to spend some time. It's free. To go spend 90 minutes and learning about Location Magic, you can go to multifamilyu.com on our website and look for the free course. It comes with a little spreadsheet, so you can't make any mistakes once the rules are all embedded in it. And you will definitely thank us. So in general, we are looking at cities that have high population growth. So definitely big populations are moving there. Big job growth. We're also all about job growth. Low unemployment or reasonable unemployment. Now, that's not an easy thing to have these days. So let's talk about that for a minute, because there was the metrics that were pre-pandemic, right? And then there's the metrics post-pandemic. Population trends are going to be interesting right now because there's a big shift, as you and I were talking about, Mark. You know, I'm not where I was at the beginning of the pandemic, nor are you. And many people are shifting and moving. it's going to be a while where, before I think we can really sort through where the populations are moving to. But I will tell you that the thing that is the most important right now to us when we're looking at markets is unemployment. You can look at unemployment. There's, you can look at the BLS.org, I believe it is. There's lots of different places, and there's very, very current data on unemployment. So you should be looking and seeing which cities have been hit the hardest and which cities have not been hit the hardest. All cities are not even in the pandemic. And some of it has to do with the industries that these cities are based on. If they, maybe if they were strong in hospitality, you know, Las Vegas has been really hard hit, as well as Orlando. But some of these cities were diverse and got hit hard, you know, cities in California, and other cities that are diverse and didn't get hard, hit hard, they never shut down, which is an interesting twist, right? So we're still seeing, obviously, we're still in a pandemic, we're in our third wave, but this is the main, one of the main things we look at is unemployment trends and find who has the least difference between their pre-pandemic unemployment rate and their post-pandemic unemployment rate. Very easy, very up-to-date information to find. Another part that you're looking at, cities that are hit really, really hard during the pandemic, if they don't have the tax basis, they're going to have a hard time getting out of it. So if you're buying real estate in a city that, or maybe if you currently own real estate in a city that's been hit very hard, they could raise your taxes really dramatically soon. So that's another thing we're looking for, and why we're looking for cities that are doing better, thus less unemployment, or at least less unemployment than others, because I think it's going to be a big factor moving forward, how cities recover, not just businesses. How do cities and states recover from the pandemic?
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. How aggressive have you guys been with your acquisitions this year? I know a lot of people were kind of waiting on the sidelines and
not us.
Especially in the beginning. Yeah. Could you speak to that a little bit and kind of how this year has gone?
Well, this year has been terrible in many, many ways, but in terms of our business, it has not been terrible at all. I think that, again, we really try to stay on top of the trends. Before the pandemic even hit, we were already pivoting. We already saw that the juice had been squeezed out of multifamily. It was really hard to make deals work in a way that was conservative and meaningful. I mean, deals, you could make any deal work by playing with underwriting and faking it. So it was getting very challenging. So we already were looking to pivot. And we have a new construction, about 50% of our portfolio is new construction. Well, if people aren't going to be paying distributions because you can't trust the rents coming in from your tenants because it's pandemic, why not be in new construction where the building is being created and there's no rents to be had? Plus, new construction loans, the lending industry was very disrupted by COVID. The residential loans were not. So you could get residential loans. Interest rates dropped. It's been fantastic for the housing market. But as you know, Mark, it's been very, very difficult for commercial real estate, multifamily real estate, et cetera, right? That Fannie and Freddie came in with all kinds of new, you know, draconian things that made it very difficult to make deals work. And that there was a lot that was not trading there. But guess what did not happen? Construction loans did not change for smaller assets. And that's the key, because we started pivoting into smaller assets. Instead of building large assets, which were going to have challenges getting the construction loans over the finish line, we started investing in smaller assets. And we're building smaller assets because banks see them as very liquid. It's very easy for them to get to sell these. Unlike large multifamily is much more challenging. And what challenge comes what? Risk for a bank. So when you have risk, then the interest rate goes higher. But we are able to get it, you know, construction loans at, you know, 4.25%, because our projects were deemed much less risky. So I always think there's a way to pivot. There's always, you always have to keep your eye on what's happening in the market. You can't just say, we only do value add multifamily, and that's, darn it, that's all we're going to do. You have to always be twisting and thinking. And what we like to do is we're really trying to mitigate risk for our investors. We are syndicators, so we use other people's money to invest in projects with us, and then we generate wealth for these people with our projected returns and our hard work as they partner with us to create those results. So we feel an extreme responsibility and are always digging in and trying to mitigate risks for our investors. So I think we're a little different. And I think because we've made these changes, we have been very successful this year. We are now starting to see multifamily come back in terms of value-add multifamily, and we're all about it and we are ready. So we are looking to acquire several value-add multifamily in the coming year. And we will continue to do our new construction, small balance multifamily products as well.
It's that time in the show for a segment called Best Deal, Worst Deal, where we talk about real estate transactions that you've done in the past so that others can learn from your knowledge and expertise. So Anna, with that said, what's the best real estate deal that you've done?
I knew this question was coming and I thought of several different deals, but I thought that a good deal to talk about, actually what I was just talking about kind of leads into this, but I thought a good deal to talk about was the deal that we were putting out when the pandemic hit. So, you know, deals take a long time to come to the table. We work as syndicators, we're working for months to get a deal ready to take to investors, right? And a lot of those deals fade away. They never go anywhere. And, you know, that was energy lost. So the pandemic hit, we've got this new product that we're coming to market because, as I said, we were looking at small balance multifamily. And the small balance multifamily product we were looking at were fourplexes, building fourplex communities. Because there's so much liquidity, you can sell them off in so many different ways. You can sell, you know, the entire set of quads to a REIT. You can sell to a multifamily operator. You could sell individual quads to people that are looking to have their kids go to college and live in one. And so there's so many different exits, and we're all about exits, right? More flexibility. The other thing that's great about quads is that it's like a residential product. And that's good in two ways. Lending is easier, right? We got our construction loans very easily because it was such an easy product for the lender to think, I can get rid of this in a snap if they default on this. And for our exit, which is the people buying it, the residential loans qualify, fourplexes qualify for residential loans. So those are going to be, you know, super low interest rates, super easy to get for a long time, we believe. The other interesting thing about this product is that it has a wellness feature built into it. And that might sound like, well, what the heck is that? Remember, this was pre-pandemic when we were coming into this. And this wellness feature is by Darwin. It's a Delos system where the air is filtered, the water is filtered, there's circadian lighting, there's a panel on the wall that basically shows you the filtration in your space versus the outside space. And it actually is able to filter out bacteria, viruses, dust, you know, all these types of things. This is the product that we were coming to market with when the pandemic hit. And we're like, oh my gosh, do we not have the best product ever to bring to market? Coupled amazing. With that, remember, multifamily, we're shutting down pools, gyms, all this type of thing. Well, the quad community we were building is a boutique urban infill community that has no pools, no elevators. It just has this gigantic 83-acre park across the street. So it's parkfront property that is no amenities because it's like for active lifestyle people that's like, I don't want to pay for a pool. Again, it was just like, wow, in the COVID times, nobody wants to live where they have to pay for amenities that they can't use because they're all shut down. So yes, we didn't know how it was going to go because, you know, the stock market was crashing, things were happening. We're coming out to market with this product. Well, it sold like gangbusters. It sold immediately. And one of the things that investors really appreciated about it, I believe, was the multiple exits that we produced. So it wasn't just, we're using other people's money to build these, but how are we exiting? Okay, because that's always very, very important. How are we getting out of it? Well, we provided three different options for exiting. One is your kind of your normal, you know, after a construction loan, then refinance and get into a permanent loan, and eventually you get out. So it was like a five-year exit and had very nice returns. But in a pandemic, what is the most concerning thing about being an apartment owner or being a rental owner? When you own a rental and you're in a pandemic, what are you most afraid of, Mark?
Rent collections.
Rent collections. So if you didn't have a mortgage, would that rent collections be a little less scary for you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing. We came up with a system where we would build the set of quads, sell half of the quads, pay off the construction loan, and hold the remainder debt-free.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. So no leverage.
No leverage. No leverage after the construction loan. And remember, we are signing on the construction loan. So yes, no leverage after the construction loan. And for that, you might think, well, the returns can't be very good on that. Well, with a two-year hold, we're looking at an average annualized projected return of 34% on people's money. You know, an IRR of 32%, like super good, right? Like that's pretty darn good with such low risk. Here's the third exit, which is if we just shot through the roof and sold all of them at certificate of occupancy. So all of the quad, we build, we sell right away. That's a 12-month hold. we're looking at 52% average annualized return, 55% IRR, okay? And guess what? We're probably going to hit those returns because those quads are flying off the shelf right now.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, and people that are buying those quads is another interesting division of the company that we've developed. So we're now selling quadplexes. And we're developing quadplexes in different parts of the world because not everybody wants to be involved in a syndication. There are many investors out there that they want to invest easily. So they want something that's not too difficult, but they want to own it all themselves. They want to make the decisions. They want to be 100% in control. Well, this is a great product for those people. There's no splits. There's, you know, and it's like a turnkey investment. So we've got the property management included. There's an HOA. It's a brand new quadplex. It's a pretty phenomenal product. So we're super excited about it. And I think that, again, it points to ways to pivot to address different audiences and always be trying to mitigate risk for investors.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. And what would you say is the worst deal that you've done?
Oh, the worst deal I've done was many years ago. It was in 2007, and I bought land in... was not Las Vegas. It was Reno, in Reno. And with the intention of parceling it, I bought like an old farmhouse, parceled it, and then was going to resell it. So I went through the whole process of doing it, following the instructions of this person that was guiding me on how to do it. And then the market fell apart. So the market completely fell apart. I couldn't sell it. This person that had been, you know, mentoring me on how to do it was like, oh, I'll help you. I'll just take them off your hands for this amount of money and then I'll pay you the rest later. Well, he never did. So he basically stole my money because he didn't give me the full amount. That was a very hard lesson in trusting people too much and not doing my due diligence on this guy's background. Because if I had looked into this person's background, who was being so helpful to me, I would have seen that he had all kinds of slashes against his business and issues going on. He ended up going to jail, not because of my case, but because of all the other, you know, many other cases, including, I think, some kind of domestic abuse. So that was my worst deal, but I guess it did help me. Even though I lost money, it taught me a lot.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
And I've recovered.
What would you say is the number one thing that you learned from that?
Due diligence. You know, you've got to do your research and follow up and figure out who it is that you are interacting with. So the internet is a great tool and you can easily find out if there's anybody's backstory. It's there on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Anna, we're about out of time, but where can others go to connect with you and kind of learn more about what you're up to?
Sure, Mark. So multifamilyu.com, that's multifamily, the letter u.com, is a great place to go and get education about apartments. We're all about multifamily there. And we do regular webinars every week. I host webinars, whether it's from our, you know, Neil or I or other commercial real estate professionals. They're free. There's never any strings attached. So that's a great place to find me. And then you can also just email me at anna@multifamilyu.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Anna. Thanks for taking the time today. I really enjoyed our conversation and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Mark. You too.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark Allen Kenny. If you're interested in apartment building investments, schedule a call with me so we can have a chance to chat. My company is focused on growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. So let's hop on a quick call and talk about your investment goals and see if we're a good fit. Find out more at stellarinvestmentgroup.com.